Welcome to Grim Gossip. Before we start the show, I want to give a proper warning. The episode you are about to hear may include grim details about assault, rape, and murder. Listener discretion is advised. Today's case is about Yasser Abdel Saeed. He was born on January 27, 1957, in Sinai, Egypt, and is the oldest of five children, having three brothers and one sister, Yusri, Yassin, Masin, and Gada. He was 26 years old when he came to the United States on a student visa in 1983. He lived with his family in Texas, where his family worked at a convenience store. That's where Yassin met Patricia for the first time in 1987. Patricia was 14 at the time. Yassin and Patricia started dating. He even went as far as asking Patricia's father for her hand in marriage. Her dad agreed to this and stated he would sign the papers for their nuptials. However, this did not last. They eventually broke up, but Patricia wasn't single for long. She began dating Yassin's older brother Yasser not too long after. Yasser was 14 years older than Patricia. He, too, asked for Patricia's hand in marriage. Yasser promised that he would offer her a better life and that his family had a lot of money, so Patricia would be well taken care of. Patricia's dad agreed to this marriage as well. However, her sister Connie told her it was a mistake, that she'd be ruining her life if she went through with this marriage. But Patricia went ahead and did it anyway. Shortly after getting married, they went to apply for Yasser's green card. About a month or two into their marriage, Patricia was pregnant with their first child, Islam. Patricia stated that they had a good marriage at first, but it only took about 6 months to a year for things to start declining. Yasser began to exert controlling behavior and began isolating Patricia from her family. He said that it's because they were American, and now he regrets marrying an American girl. Yasser started working as a taxicab driver when Islam was born in 1988. Then, the following year, 1989, Patricia gave birth to a baby girl named Amina. And the year after that, they had their third and final child, Sarah. Yasser would often come home, and if Patricia was sleeping, he would wake her up by kicking her, hitting her, or clearing up the dresser drawers and forcing her to clean it all again right there on the spot. He even cut her on the leg because she wouldn't have sex with him. When the girls were a little older, they went to visit their maternal grandparents. This is when Patricia's mother called her to tell her that the girls had disclosed to them that their father had been molesting them. Patricia left Yasser to stay with her mother. The police department was contacted, child protective services were notified, and a case of child sexual abuse had been opened. Grim, specific details about their abuse was documented in statements. According to the statements, the girls said that their own father had been touching them in an inappropriate manner, and they were forced to touch him in the same manner. They also said that he had penetrated them with his penis at least once when their mother and brother were away. They expressed their fear of him because he was physically abusive, but also stated that they were afraid of their uncles as well. They were afraid to say anything because their father had threatened them, and they didn't want him to hit them anymore. The girls were taken to get examined at Cook's Children's Hospital in Fort Worth, Texas. Upon examination at the hospital, it was determined that sexual abuse could not be ruled out, which Patricia took to mean that there is no evidence of abuse. Patricia then filed a report with the police, and Yasser was brought in for questioning. He couldn't believe what he was being accused of and denied the allegations. In response to this, Yasser went to the police with his own filing, stating his wife had written a check without his permission. He was claiming forgery and wanted his wife arrested. The district attorney's office reviewed his case and ultimately concluded that the check could not be filed as forgery. Meanwhile, Patricia was staying at her parents' house with the kids. Yasser called them endlessly at all hours of the day. Most would go unanswered, but when they did answer, they would end up telling him to stop calling and he would threaten them. Eventually, they just unplugged the phone altogether because it wouldn't stop ringing. Yasser then decided to just drive by the house to make his threats in person. The police were called and told him that he would be arrested for making threats if he didn't leave. Shortly after, Yasser was arrested for retaliation, which in this instance would be his threats to physically harm Patricia and her family. It was not long before he was bonded out, though. The girls then recanted all of their allegations against their father, apparently to keep him out of jail. Amina wrote a letter to her Aunt Connie revealing the truth of what was really happening, that Amina and Sarah were told to lie and tell the police that they made everything up. She begged her aunt not to let them go back to their father. Connie informed Child Protective Services about the letter, and they wanted to speak to Patricia regarding this. Connie told Patricia about the letter and how she had informed CPS about it. But instead of speaking to CPS, Patricia took the children back to Yasser. The letter written by Amina was never seen again. Patricia has since stated that her mother forced the kids to lie about the abuse and does not believe that Yasser would ever abuse his daughters. After Patricia went back to Yasser, they moved away to Maryland for a couple of months, then to Egypt for another couple months, before ultimately moving back to Bedford, Texas. As the girls got older, of course they became Americanized. They participated in extracurricular activities and even got jobs. But Yasser followed them everywhere, even videotaped them doing regular, everyday things like working or jumping on the trampoline. In one video, Yasser was recording Sarah while she was at work from his car. Patricia and Amina were in the car with him. He made a comment about how she smiled too much at the customers and that she would be in trouble for that. Meanwhile, in the background, you can hear Amina telling her father that she had to. It was part of her job. Both girls even had American boyfriends, which they had to keep secret for fear of reprisals from their father, not just for their safety, but for the safety of the boys as well. Amina met the love of her life, Joseph, at her Taekwondo class. When they began dating, she made sure he knew never to text her unless she texted him, because Yasser went through their phones. It would appear they were very careful about how they communicated with their boyfriends. Amina and Joseph hand-wrote letters to one another or sent emails. But one day, she forgot to hide a letter that she was writing to Joseph. Yasser found the letter and became enraged. He woke Amina up by kicking her in the stomach with boots on and calling her a whore. He demanded to know who this boy was and where he lived, but Amina wouldn't tell him the truth. She told him the letter was to an imaginary boyfriend. It was not a real person. But Yasser didn't believe her. He continued to beat her and kick her as she screamed, but she still wouldn't give up the love of her life. The beating was so bad that Amina's lips were apparently embedded into her braces. Patricia was taking Amina to the hospital, but Yasser's brothers called her to tell her to go back home. Otherwise, Yasser would end up in jail for this. So Patricia did just that. And Amina was made to heal from her wounds at home. Amina detailed all of these events in an email to a trusted individual, her Taekwondo instructor. Yasser immediately moved the family to Louisville, which was 40 minutes away from their home in Bedford. When I say immediately, I mean within 2 days, they had vacated their home in Bedford and were completely moved into their new home in Louisville. In Amina's email to her instructor, she asked him to give Joseph a message. Unsure of what to do, the instructor provided Joseph's parents with this message, but for his safety, they withheld this message for a while. This is when Ruth, Joseph's mom, and Amina began to form a closer bond. Ruth and Amina were in regular contact with one another. Amina made sure Ruth knew she was still alive, but desperately wanted to talk to Joseph. Of course, Ruth did not allow this yet, because if what Amina said about her father is true, then there was a real risk of physical harm for everyone involved, and Ruth did believe her. Yasser then began to plan another trip to Egypt for him and his daughters. Amina expressed her fear to Ruth. She was afraid that her and Sarah were going to be brought there to be married off and left there. Amina shared all of the information that she could with Ruth. Her social security number and her flight plans, just in case they got stranded and she'd have to find her way back. When they got to Egypt, Yasser did in fact take their American passports and hung on to them. It seemed like Amina's and Sarah's fears were coming true. Somehow, Amina was able to send Ruth an email to let her know they were alive and in Egypt. She said she would try to contact Ruth again if she could, but she never did. Luckily, the girls came back to the States eventually, unharmed and unmarried. Amina reached out to Ruth as soon as they got back to let her know they had gotten back safely. Amina begged Ruth to let her talk to Joseph. She wanted to talk to him and see him again. So Ruth finally gave Joseph Amina's information so they could start talking again. It was like they had never stopped talking to begin with. They planned to run away to Vegas to get eloped and start a new life. Finally, on Christmas Day in 2007, Amina texted Joseph to let him know that she and Sarah had finally run away. Concerned about the situation, Ruth wanted to go get them, but Amina said she would let them know where they ended up. They were headed to Kansas, where Patricia's aunt, Jill, lived. Patricia had gone with them. It was Amina, her friend Eddie, Sarah, and Sarah's boyfriend Eric. When they arrived at Jill's house, everything came out. Amina told Jill about how their father had beat them and how their mom wanted to leave too, and that's why she was with them. But Jill had her doubts that Patricia would stay away from Yasser. She had forgiven him for so many things. Jill was more inclined to believe that Patricia would end up running back. Apparently, Patricia stated that she could not go back to him, because if she did, Yasser would definitely kill Amina and Sarah. All three girls had decided to break their SIM cards so they couldn't be tracked and picked up new phones. At this point, Yasser and Islam had both filled out a police report. They had reported the girls missing back in Texas. Louisville police searched for them by calling family members and wanted to speak to Patricia. They just wanted to ensure everyone was safe. But Patricia didn't want to speak to them from Jill's house. She said she would reach out to the police department in a few days. And when she finally did call them, she let them know that she had took the girls and had no intentions of going back out of fear of her husband. One night, Patricia had decided that they could not stay at Jill's house. She told her aunt that they would go to Tulsa instead. So on December 27th, They all got in the car and drove to Tulsa, where they would stay in a hotel while looking for a house to rent. Just like before, Yasser harassed the family, but this time it wasn't with threats. He called everyone he could and asked if they knew where Patricia had taken the girls. He told them he missed them and just wanted them home. Islam followed suit and did the same thing. But they all told Yasser and Islam the same thing. No one had any idea where they were. Connie, of course, spoke to Patricia and told her not to go back, not to fall into any of his traps or sweet talk. Patricia said she had no intention of going back. The very next day, on December 28th, they had already signed a lease for an apartment in Tulsa. They were ready to move in. Of course, Amina was still in regular contact with Joseph. She had received multiple emails from her father, begging them to come home, all unanswered. Patricia regularly checked her voicemail on her previous phone, which you were able to do by calling your phone and entering a PIN. There were multiple voicemails from Yasser, Islam, and Yasser's siblings, all telling them to come back to Texas. Patricia said they all decided to call Yasser's brother, Yusri, because of all of the messages and emails he had been leaving. Yusri told them that if they didn't want Yasser around, then they would make him leave. After speaking to him, Patricia said they all then decided to call Yasser to speak to him. And that's when they all decided to go back to Texas. At this point, they had only been gone for 2 days. Amina's friend Eddie had to go back to Texas. At the time, Eddie, Amina's friend, was a DJ and had a show coming up in Texas, so he had to go, but he planned to come right back. Patricia had decided that she wanted to go back to Texas to put flowers on her mom's grave for her birthday and then stay with her sister Connie through the new year. So they all went together, but unfortunately, Patricia had tricked them. She finally disclosed to them that she intended to go back to their father, and she wanted them to go with her. Amina blew up at her mom, told her that she was not going back to him, and instead went to stay at Eddie's house, where she refused to leave. Patricia said that she had already approved of Amina going to her friend's house to have a cookout with them, and that later, Amina called her to pick her up. But others would say that Amina absolutely didn't want to go back with her mom, but that she would eventually give in. Amina called her Aunt Connie, telling her what was happening. She asked what she should do, and Connie told her to go and file a restraining order, and Amina said okay. On New Year's Day of 2008, Amina reluctantly went back to her family home in Louisville, all the while letting Joseph know what was happening. He encouraged her not to go back, but she insisted that she had to do what she had to do, and she told him that she loved him. When they got back to the house, Yasser insisted that he take the girls out for dinner. Patricia initially said she wanted to go with them, but Yasser insisted on this father and daughter time. He said he wanted to talk to them about this and put it all behind them. So off they went in his cab to get dinner. It wasn't long before a 911 call came in from Sarah. Yasser had shot Amina, who was in the passenger seat, twice in the chest, and Sarah, who was in the back seat. Warning, the clip I'm about to play for you is a distressed call from Sarah after having been shot.
Irving 911, what is your emergency? What's going on, ma'am?
I'm dying, mademoiselle.
Okay, let me transfer you. I'm gonna get ma'am, fire department on that, okay? Hold on one sec, okay? Department. Ma'am, are you still there? Ma'am, are you still there?
The 911 call lasted a total of 42 minutes. The police were trying to locate them, but because they were still moving, they had difficulties tracking down their location. Then, the dispatchers heard a car door shut and everything was silent. Sarah had not said anything else. Finally, someone spotted the cab just sitting in the taxi bay in front of a hotel in Irving, Texas. It appears that Yasser had shot his daughters, drove around with them for a while, then abandoned the cab and ran. Here is the 911 call from the person who found them.
Having 911, Coach, what's your emergency?
My name is, we have a cab in our cab stand. It doesn't appear that there's a driver, but there are two people inside the cab, one in the passenger seat and one in the rear of the vehicle. One of the people in the passenger seat looks like she's hunched over, and she has blood coming from her ear. She does not look like she's pretty. It doesn't look like they're alive to me.
I understand that. We've got our officers en route.
Hey.
You see an officer there?
I need you to step away. I'm sorry. Yeah, there's an officer here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
In the full audio, Sarah could be heard screaming because her dad had continued to attack her. They traced the phone number, which led them to the owner of the cell phones, back to their home in Louisville. They pulled Patricia and Islam to the police department for questioning. From there, a manhunt began, but Yasser was nowhere to be found. No one had seen him flood the scene. According to phone records, Yasser had called one of his siblings and talked to them multiple times for extended periods of time the night of the murders. He had even called Patricia at one point that night, but no one could locate him. They held a joint funeral for the girls, and of course, Joseph went. He sat in the second row behind the family, as close as he could get to Amina. But Islam turned around and saw him, and a physical altercation broke out between the two. The family told Joseph he needed to leave. Islam told Joseph this was his fault and asked him where Yasser was. Asked Joseph if he was involved. Of course, Joseph fought back and said no, but he ultimately left. Patricia had decided to bury the girls in a Muslim burial ground, but her family begged her not to. The funeral grounds looked sad and unkept, but Patricia thought it was best. After this, Patricia moved in with Yasser's brother and wife, but apparently they kept making comments about how her daughters were whores and they deserved it, so she left, but left Islam there. She said she thought it would be better for him because he'd be surrounded by people he knows. They continued to look for Yasser, but had no luck. Patricia's family believed that his family had helped him escape, maybe even went back to Egypt, but he was gone. They also believed that the police department wasn't looking hard enough for him. Meanwhile, Islam got on camera and pleaded for his father to turn himself in, that he would help his father get a good lawyer and maybe he wouldn't get the death penalty. Islam also responded to reporters in a less than favorable way, cussing at them and threatening to sue them if they talked about Amina and Sarah again. News stories started to come out about their deaths, calling it an honor killing, describing what they had to go through before they got to this point. In an interview with Joseph, he explained why he didn't leave with them when they left to Kansas. It was because Amina had the wherewithal to fake a boyfriend and began erasing Joseph so that when they could finally get away together, her dad wouldn't know where to look. And Ruth wanted to help them. She wanted them to be married and to be able to get away, and for Amina to be safe and happy. But they would never get their happy ending. The SWAT team raided their home in Louisville, but informed Patricia. They allowed her to take what she needed from the home, which apparently included a computer, a box of documents like their birth certificates, pictures, and a camcorder. Soon, though, this case would grow cold. Yasser was in the wind, and no one knew where he was. Almost everyone thought that since locating him was so difficult, he must have gone back to Egypt. But there was no record of him ever leaving. Connie and Jill, on the other hand, never believed that. They believed that Yasser was still in Texas somewhere. The makers of the documentary called The Price of Honor, which can be found on Amazon Prime Video, attempted to make contact with the Saeed family. But when they did, they were met with multiple threats and name-calling. They did not attempt to make contact again. In 2014, 6 years after the murders of Amina and Sarah, Yasser was added to the FBI 10 Most Wanted Fugitives list, and a $100,000 reward was offered for any tips leading to his arrest. On August 14, 2017, the FBI caught a break, and a maintenance worker in a Bedford, Texas apartment complex reported seeing a man matching Yasser's description. The apartment belonged to Islam. The maintenance worker was shown a photo of Yasser, and he positively identified him as the man he saw. When an agent went to question Islam, he refused to answer questions and wouldn't let them in. Around 1 a.m. that evening, Islam made a call to someone and stated that there was a problem. A search warrant was approved, and the apartment was then raided. But the apartment was empty of anyone. They noticed the patio door was open when they went in, and the bushes below looked like it had been smushed. When they went to investigate, they found broken glasses, which they took for DNA testing. They also took cigarette butts and a toothbrush. When they tested the DNA, it was a paternal match to Amina and Sarah. Eventually, this would lead them to a home in Justin, Texas, which is not far from Bedford. In 2020, the police were provided with the ability to surveil this home 24/7. They witnessed Islam and Yasser's brother Yassin coming and going. They seemed to be the only ones living there. But when both Islam and Yassin left, they could see that there was someone still moving around in the house. After a week of surveillance, the FBI finally got a search warrant for the home, and they found Yasser hiding inside. On August 26, 2020, Yasser was finally arrested. Back in Bedford, Islam and Yassin were arrested on charges of aiding and abetting a fugitive. In January of 2021, Islam was brought to trial. He ultimately pled guilty to harboring a fugitive, conspiring to harbor a fugitive, and one count of conspiracy to obstruct justice. On April 27, 2021, Islam was sentenced to 10 years in federal prison. Yassin, on the other hand, denied any involvement. He stated, had he known that Yasser had killed his daughters, he would have never helped him. On February 4th, 2021, Yassin was found guilty of conspiracy and harboring a fugitive. He was sentenced to 12 years in prison. In August of 2022, Yasser was finally brought to trial. His argument was that he wasn't there when his daughters were murdered. He believed that someone was after him, looking to harm him, so he left his girls in the cab and ran, even leaving his gun in the car, which he said he carried with him for protection. He then changed his story on the stand and stated that he believed someone was after them and thought it was an altercation the girls were involved with. He believed they would solve it on their own. He stated that he had communicated this with the girls and told them that the cab was theirs for now. They knew how to drive and believed that they'd be safe. When questioned about why he parked where he parked, he stated that he believed there to be a lot of cameras where they would be safe. He then blamed this society for looking at him as a Muslim man and expecting the worst. That's why he ran. He didn't believe he would get a fair trial based on his religion. He said that he may not have liked his daughter's dating habits, but he did not kill them. In interviews before Yasser was caught, Patricia stated that Yasser would never hurt his daughters, because who would hurt their own daughters? Yasser was only abusive towards her, never the children. But during the trial, Patricia testified against Yasser, saying that they all feared him. The officer who responded to the 911 call and found the girls, Richard Bracey, got emotional on the stand when he had to describe the state of the girls when he arrived. No one believed Yasser's defense, and he was charged with capital murder. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. In the closing arguments, the prosecutor, Lauren Black, stated the following, quote, "If you intentionally or knowingly caused the death of another in Dallas County, we are coming for you, period. You will be prosecuted, period. It has nothing to do with your race or religion," unquote. After Yasser was convicted, he finally gave an interview with Court TV in the series Interview with a Killer. He said he did this interview because of the political conspiracy surrounding him. He said the FBI knows he is innocent and is using this case to prove a political point. When asked about his daughters and what he could remember about them, he couldn't give them any personal details. He could only say they were good kids and they were smart. This interview seemed to prove that he was looking to use this as a way to exonerate himself and not talk about his daughters or what happened to them. He spoke about a conspiracy and how, quote, they, unquote, were out to get him. In the interview with Court TV, he stated that he did not in fact have a gun, but his court testimony disputes this. When the sexual abuse allegations were brought up, Yasser was visibly uncomfortable and said it was a lie. Yasser said he had never done those things and asked if it was true, then why was he not in jail for that? He was then confronted with his daughter's own words, Amina's, who told someone that they were scared of their father, that their father was going to kill them. Amina also said Yasser was trying to marry them off, even that their father had insinuated that he would do what he used to do to them when they were younger. But Yasser refused to listen to these words. He said that those were not Amina's words and refused to admit anything that he was accused of. Yasser ended the interview there and hung up the phone. He will spend the rest of his life in a Texas prison. And that is where the case ends. If you guys enjoyed today's episode, there's many more to come. Hit the subscribe button so that you get notifications when new episodes drop. If you have any suggestions, send them my way at grimgossippod@gmail.com and follow me on Instagram @grimgossippod. All websites used for the research is in the show notes if you guys want to take a deeper dive into this case. Thank you for listening. Until next time.